go. So, all right. So, thank you everybody for coming. So I thought of this topic. I know about chametz and kidneys. What else can't I eat on Pesach? So, I said this to Chava. Chava said, "Oh, I know. You're going to talk about gebrachs." I said, "No, gebrachs is a chametz issue. We're going to talk about other things that one is not permitted to eat on Pesach." Oh, there's all that stuff with the garlic. Oh, like there's a little section in Rabbi Eider's book about garlic and about eggs and these kinds of things. No,
tomatoes.
Those are all chametz issues. We're going to talk about other prohibitions with eating having to do with Pesach. The truth is, I do start Erev Pesach, but I don't start with Tanis Bechorim. I don't start with the idea of the elders fasting. That's really a different topic. But we're going to do matzah and Erev Pesach, issues having to do with meat. And what else do we got here? Eating and drinking after the first cup, between the first and second cup, karpas issues, dipping issues, and after the afikoman. All of those have to do with prohibitions of eating, not having to do with chametz and kidneys. Okay, so matzah and Erev Pesach. So the Rama writes in the beginning, so it's underlined, the underlined part, of a matzah sheyotzen ba balayla asurim lechol kol yom arbaasar, the entire day of the 14th, one is not permitted to eat matzah. Now, there are those that begin this prohibition the day of the 14th, Erev Pesach, right? The day before that day, right? Right, so there are those that begin at earlier times. There's a question about whether the night before, perhaps the night before already, there's already a prohibition of eating matzah. There are those that start from Rosh Chodesh, and there are those that start all the way from Adar. In my house growing up, my mother, so for some reason, this was like a big kpeda. No matzah b'rai after Purim. That was the din. Okay.
30 days.
Okay, well, you need a makor, Rabbi Kohn. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he discusses where do these concepts come from about Erev Yontif or Rosh Chodesh or about 30 days before, and he says it's in the Haggadah, right? That section of the Haggadah, Yachol Me Rosh Chodesh. I would have thought already from the time of Rosh Chodesh, I just start discussing. Is that maybe I would have even thought 30 days before? Right, so it goes in that order. So those are the list of the Minhagim in terms of when one stops eating matzah. There is a of Ram that discusses already the night before should be, mean those would just be minhagim. To stop eating matzah 15 days or 30 days before, that would clearly only be a minhag. Would there be a halacha the night before? So there's I think a Magin of Ram that seems to talk about that because it's already the time, we already start searching for chametz then. However, I think Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky in this Sefer seems to not be so inclined to that opinion. And he in fact brings an interesting proof. He says that the proof comes from Manishtana. What does it say in Manishtana? Right? Shebechol halilos anu ochlim chametzu matzah. Every other night of the year you could eat chametz and matzah. Oh. Chametz and matzah. Tonight is only matzah. Well, what does that mean? That means the last night I could have eaten either chametz or matzah. Okay. Take it or leave it. But that is his...
So much for these minhagim from early on.
That is his... Yeah. Well, the minhag could override that. But he says, I'll pi halacha, to say that the halacha would already begin the night before, so that he thinks would not be... one is not able to do. So what is the reason for that? So the Mishnah Berurah records, it's either the Mishnah Berurah's reason is because in order to separate matzah that you just eat because you like eating matzah and matzah that you actually eat for the mitzvah. Perhaps the more famous reason, even though for some reason it's not quoted in the Mishnah Berurah, is based on the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says it's ki'ilu boel beves arusasa. It's as if one has had relations with your wife before one was permitted to have relations with one's wife. That it's you're jumping the gun a little bit, and he thinks that that is inappropriate. The Ramah continues very interestingly with just as one is not permitted. Permitted to eat matzah the Erev Pesach. Perhaps there's a whole list of other things that one shouldn't eat on Erev Pesach. There's a whole list, right? There are a lot of things that one eats the night of the Seder. Perhaps one shouldn't eat any of them on Erev Pesach. So he suggests... he suggests that you shouldn't eat maror on Erev Pesach. So you'd eat the maror with excitement. And he says perhaps one shouldn't eat things that would go into your charoses, right? Things you're not supposed to eat any fruit because that might go into your charoses, right? He says that already is going a little bit too far. Even eating maror is probably also maybe perhaps going a little bit. Does one have to be choshish for that? Is unclear. But the main halacha has to do with not eating matzah on Erev Pesach. So does that mean any matzah products? Does that mean anything that contains matzah meal in it? Right. So the last line of the Ramah is left somewhat ambiguous. The Ramah writes matzah shenefa ketikna, matzah that was baked as it was supposed to be, right? V'achar kach nispara, and afterwards you crumble it, v'nilusha b'yayin v'shemen, and then you knead it with wine and with oil, right? That's what we call cake, right? But he didn't say anything about making it, right? Eino nikris matzah ashira, v'asur la'achla b'erev Pesach. It's not called matzah ashira, and you are prohibited to eat it on Erev Pesach. What does that mean? Meaning it's not called matzah shir, it's still called matzah. Oh. Possibly, maybe not definitely, and I wouldn't recommend, but possibly one could even fulfill one's mitzvah the night with that concoction. So it says the Ramah, if you could possibly fulfill the mitzvah with that concoction, right? All he says is crumbled matzah and oil mixed with oil and wine. So it's potentially a mitzvah there. So he says that shouldn't be eaten. Now, he left something out of the process, right? The Ramah did not prohibit, what if you bake it, cook it? He didn't say anything about that. He just said crumbled matzah mixed with wine and oil. So what about if you go ahead and do something else to it? So the Mishnah Berurah picks up on that. And that's in the underlined part where he says vav chaf zayin v'chol zeh b'shelo bashla, when it wasn't cooked, aval im bashla, but if you cook this stuff, the chamoshin noagim b'medina seinu lasos kadurim mimatzah, like we do in our countries where we make balls from the matzah, shakorin kenedalach, right? That you make matzah balls, so matzah mevushalis, that's cooked matzah b'kli rishon. He says mutter la'ochla kodem sha'asiris dezeh bevadai lo mikri matzah, that you're permitted to eat until the 10th hour of the day. The 10th hour of the day is already time to start getting ready for the seder. You really should really avoid eating anything that will fill you up at that point. So you're allowed to eat that throughout the duration of the day. That's cooked matzah, that's okay. Now there is a gap, right? The Ramah said if you take matzah, crumble it up and mix it with oil and water and wine, says that's, you shouldn't eat. The Mishnah Berurah said if you crumble it up, mix it with water, and then you cook it, that you're allowed to eat. The gap in the middle is baked things, right? If you make a cookie out of matzah meal, you make cake out of a matzah meal, is that permitted to be eaten? So that Mishnah Berurah doesn't comment on that. That's just that's a gap. And the in the Sefer Kovei Tzelacha, so the quote from Shmuel Kamenetsky that he says Meikar Adin, it's probably okay, but it's a good chumrah. I mean, it's a good chumrah to not eat cakes and cookies made of matzah meal on Erev Pesach. So you can't say that it is usher. Okay, so that takes care of matzah and Erev Pesach. Yes,
egg matzah wouldn't fall into this problem.
So egg matzah is potentially chametz that we Ashkenazim, right? All Ashkenazim in this room, right? So Ashkenazim would treat egg matzah as chametz, at least unless one has a specific reason not to. One will treat it as one will treat it as chametz, and therefore it has all the rules and regulations of that.
Which is in
I can't have
any matzah
during Pesach.
Right. Right. We try to avoid.
You have to know it till 10 o'clock or
so. So it would be, it's included in the chametz rules. There are those that are make lebat on Erev Pesach, but I think just to make everything clear, I would avoid. Okay. I would take it out of commission already when the chametz goes out of commission. Okay, so that all is matzah Erev Pesach. There is, it's the beginning of the 10th parak of Maseches Pesachim, known as Arvei Pesachim, so it begins with that you're not allowed to eat on Erev Pesach from the time of Mincha onwards. So the Gemara seems to say, so Tosfos there on the spot asks, says, what are you going to eat already? Right? You're not allowed to eat matzah, right? And you're not allowed to eat... And you're not allowed to eat chametz, right? So what are you allowed to eat? So he says, well, you'd be allowed to maybe eat... and he says, and you're also some of what he calls mini targima. I don't know what to call that, candy, licorice, maybe a vegetable or two if it's not included in the maror list, right? So that maybe for sure you'd be allowed to eat. He says, so what's being prohibited during that time, right? So he actually gives the answer of matzah shira. That's what Tosfos answers, matzah shira. However, the Shulchan Aruch really passed, and that's assuming that matzah shira would be okay, egg matzah would be okay. However, later authorities point out that the minhag became that we don't eat egg matzah over the course of Ashkenazim, don't eat egg matzah over the course of Pesach.
Right,
yes.
You could eat non-gebracht stuff, whatever.
You can eat non-gebracht stuff.
Like potato starch things.
If you would, right. So that would be okay. Well, potato starch stuff, believe it or not, you make a shahakol on, right? Yeah. Potato starch cake, you make a brach of shahakol on. Mm-hmm. So, right, you'd be allowed to eat that during that time.
The 10th hour is the 10th hour from sunrise?
The 10th hour from sunrise, right. So my colleague at Torah Academy, Rabbi Shrezensky, coined the term jowers. It is the 10th jour of the day, Jewish hours. Right? You count from sunrise to sunset, divided into 12, and so it's going to be a different time every year. It's otherwise known as Mincha Ketana. That is the if you look on a Maizmanim or on a Luach calendar, that's what it will be called. Okay, next. So issues with meat. So there's always this like issue out there. What's the story? There's actually two significant issues with meat that are talked about, but they both actually emanate from the same Mishnah and Gemara. So that's what I have here. It's translated in English as well. The Mishnah comments, Makom shenahagu lechol tzli b'leilei psachim ochlin. Makom shenahagu shelo lechol ein ochlin. The place where the custom was to eat roasted meat the night of Pesach, you should eat it. And the place where the minhag was not to eat it, you would not eat it. Now, that Mishnah is not just, you could do whatever you want. The Mishnah is, no. Places had the minhag to do it, you should dafka do it. Right? It was established in specific places that we should have roasted meat on the night of Pesach. Why? Specifically to remind us of the Korban Pesach. Right? And there are other places that were concerned that if we remind people too much of the Korban Pesach, they might actually think that it is the Korban Pesach, which could lead to all sorts of problems which are discussed in the Gemara. So the Gemara comments, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Asul Adam Shiyomar Basar Zel Pesachu. It is prohibited for a person to say, this meat is for Pesach. Why? Because it looks like you are sanctifying that meat. What are we supposed to say about that this meat is for Pesach? We're supposed to say it about the Korban Pesach, right? This meat is for Pesach, in which case we have sanctified it. So we shouldn't say about anything, this meat is for Pesach, even, and we'll see how this is discussed the halacha, because of that concern that we don't want to possibly sanctify anything. So the Gemara continues.
Even though this is coming at a time after the
yes, the laws of Kachim, the laws of Kachim are still applicable today.
Okay,
right. I remember one time being very late at night in the Beis Medrash one night, and I was learning with my chavrusa, and one person, there were two other guys there, and one of them like went to get cookies that the other guy had. And I said, no, don't take my cookies. They're hektish. To which, they're sanctified. And then, like as a joke, he kind of said it. And I was kind of on the side saying, I'm not sure you want to have any more of those cookies at this point. I'm not really sure what you're going to do with them, but I'm not sure you want to eat them anymore. We talked to Rav Schechter about it the next morning, and we discussed it. But then, whatever. Whatever happens in the Beis Medrash at 1 in the morning, stays in the Beis Medrash at 1 in the morning. That was probably part of the answer. But that was the... that's a practical, hektish shaila that appeared in Bizman Hazeh. So that is an issue, and the Gemara says v'ochel kachim b'chutz. And if you actually sanctified, or it looks like you sanctified something, and you're eating the sanctified food outside of the Beis Hamikdash. So Amar Rav Papa comments dafka basar. That's only a problem when it comes to meat. Aval chiti lo, but wheat, you don't have to worry about that. If you say this wheat is for Pesach, so you don't have to worry that people think that you're sanctifying it, right? The minter lepasach ka'amar, right? Because that is we understand why that would be set aside, that would be guarded for Pesach. So Gemara asks, Ubasar lo, really? You couldn't say about meat? So Meisvi, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Todos ish romi, that Todos apparently was in Rome. Hinig espinei romi, so the minhag in Rome was, Lechol gedim mikulasim belaila psach, belaila psachim. They would specifically eat what's called helmeted gedim, meaning they would roast it together with its entrails on top of its head or something, the night of Pesach. So sholchulo, and they sent him, il mali todos atav, wasn't it the fact that you were the special impressive chashuv todos, gazarnu alayach nidui, would put you in cheirim, shata machles Yisrael kachim b'chutz, was you're causing the Jews to eat kachim outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So there's really two halachos that are coming out from this. Number one is that there's the custom, at least many have the custom of not roasting meat over the night of Pesach. That is, I think the minhag throughout all of Ashkenazi Jewry is not to roast meat over the night of Pesach. And the other halacha that we learn from this Gemara is something about not referring to meat as being for Pesach. And we'll see how that plays out, the halacha, in a second. Is there, yes?
Does meat mean poultry?
So hold on.
You can say Chag HaMatzot and
So hold on. So says the Shulchan Aruch. Makum shenahagu lechol tzli b'leilei psachem ochlim. So the first halacha we'll deal with is about eating the roasted meat. So the Shulchan Aruch comments, in a place where the minhag was to eat roasted meat the night of Pesach, one is permitted to eat it. Makum shenahagu shelo lechol, but a place where you don't have that custom, ein ochlin, you shouldn't eat it. Gezeir shema yomru basar pesachu. Plus people might say that this is for the Korban Pesach. Uvechol makum asr lechol and certainly you're not allowed to eat an entire roasted goat, right? On this night, what that's also going to look like, you're eating kachim outside. He says, however, if you cut off a piece of it, then maybe it would be okay. But that's only according to those that allow roasted meat. We don't allow any roasted meat, so therefore no roasting is going to be allowed. That's what the Mishnah Berurah comments in the little thing in the underlying part. He says, of elu artzos, in our lands, one is not permitted to eat roasted meat, even if it's roasted in a pot. Now, the Korban Pesach had to be roasted on a spit, and as those from the Shulchan Aruch Shir know, it has to be a wooden spit, right? It couldn't be a metal spit. It had to be a wooden spit that they roasted the Korban Pesach on. And the Mishnah Berurah comments, Peirush Shenitzla B'Kedera, that it's roasted in a pot, below Mayim, V'Shumashka El Mispashel B'Mol HaYotzi Mimenu, that it's roasted in a pot, and without any liquid, other than the liquid that comes out of that meat. So Afal Pisha Einu Doma L'Tzliyas HaPesach, even though it's not similar to the way they would roast the Korban Pesach, shapesach shenitzel b'kedera pasul, that if you would roast the Pesach in this specific way, it would be pasul, it would be not kosher, bad.
Disqualified.
Thank you. Afilu hachi yesh la'osam yifnei maris ha'ayin. Even so, you should prohibit it because of maris ha'ayin. Maris ha'ayin is, people are going to look at it and say, what is this stuff you're bringing out to the table? They're not going to know exactly how it was roasted in the back. So no roasting, no pot roast. If there's no liquid that's put in, so that becomes prohibited. So one second. So in the Sefer Kovetz Halachos, where it records the halachos from Rav Shmuel, so the quote there: the chol zemayri b'deleika shum mayim b'kateira. If there is no water at all in the pot, avali nasan afilu ma'at mayim. Even if you put a little bit of water in, b'tachtid hakateira, right at the bottom of the pot, sulo mikreit slikal. That's no longer called roasting at all, v'vadai shari, and then it would be permissible. So if you want to have somewhat roasted meat, so you put a little bit of water in the bottom, and one can avoid this prohibition. Yes?
Does it have to be water or any liquid?
I think any liquid would be okay. He says water, but I would assume any liquid should be fine. As long as the sauce is separate from the meat itself, right? As long as that's being poured from something else, yeah.
That means it's not roasted, right? I mean, that's how it's
not. So it's halakhically not going to be considered roasted anymore.
So the halakhic definition of roasting is dry.
Right. Right. That has important ramifications when it comes to kashering, when it comes to Teflon frying pans, when it comes to kashering ovens and baking sheets and all that kind of stuff, right? The same definitions between cooking and roasting are going to be applicable. Cooking, things you cook on are a lot easier to kasher than things you roast on.
And it's irrelevant whether it's in a pot on the stove or in the pot in the oven, as long as it has liquid.
I don't think it would make a difference. Yeah, right. I don't think it would make a difference. There is an interesting, I'm learning this with my shir in school. We happen to be learning psachim this year, so now we've been waiting all year. Now it's for finally getting close to the holiday. So the halacha is, We learn about the zroa, the arm, the shank bone that we have at the at night. That's to remember the Korban Pesach. Does anybody know why we specifically use a shank bone, an arm?
Yaakov.
What?
Yaakov.
What do you mean?
Does
Yaakov stretch his arm out? Close. That's Hashem. Because we say zroa netuya, that Hashem stretched out his arm. Oh. So therefore, we use an arm. I thought it was just because that's the cheap piece of meat that the butcher happened to have. But apparently, the Mishnah Berurah at least qualifies that as being based on something. So the Mishnah Berurah also adds it. So in the two pieces of meat that one had, or two things that we have in our Seder plate, one is to remember the Korban Pesach, and one is to remember the Korban Chagiga. So the thing that you use to remember the Korban Pesach has to be roasted, right? That's the halacha, that it has to be roasted. So the Mishnah Berurah points out, what?
That's why the egg is roasted.
That's why the egg is roasted. So the truth is, why the egg is roasted is a little unclear to me, because that's to remember the chagiga, and the chagiga could be roasted or cooked. So I looked around. People say, in Shulchan Aruch it actually says the minhag is to have a cooked egg. Got to ask the Abrahams, the Sephardim, whether they actually specifically cook it or not. And the Ramah adds in, and we have a custom that you can, it seems like he's saying that you can roast it also. I mean, it's not necessarily the ideal is to roast it, but you could also roast it. But here, in also in Rishul Kamenetsky Sefer, so he says our minug is to roast it. So we roast the egg. But the shank bone... I would suggest that. Right. 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 But he's saying that you would, if you have to roast it at all, is that really necessary? So the halacha is that if you if it is Seder night, so this year Seder night is
first night. This year
the Seder night is Friday night. However, other years Seder night, or this year the second night of the Seder happens to be a weeknight. So in theory, you can cook that night. So is it permissible to roast your shank bone the night of the Seder? So the Mishnah Brewer jumps in and says, whoa, you got to be careful with that, because if you're just roasting it to put on your Seder plate, so that would be a violation of cooking on Yontif, right? The Mishnah Brewer says if you're stuck, so then you should roast your, and you're not allowed to eat it that night because you're not allowed to eat roasted meat. So the Mishnah Brewer says, so what do you do if you don't have a roasted piece of meat to put on your Seder plate? So he says you can roast it, but you better eat it the next morning. So I was like, I thought for a second, wait, the next morning, like for breakfast, like with your, right after your coffee, like, well, why do you have to eat the next morning? Then I realized, because there's no refrigeration, so what are you going to, otherwise it's going to spoil, right? So if you're going to eat it, you better eat it soon. But if one hasn't roasted yet anything for that night, so you could technically roast it that night, again, not Friday night, but a Yontif night, but you better eat it. You have to eat it over the course of Yontif. Technically, the Mishnah Berurah also points out you're allowed to eat the roasted egg that night. The idea of prohibiting eating roasted things only applies to meat; it doesn't apply to the egg. So that you're also permitted to. You don't have to. There is one more halacha on this. The Chai Adam actually was very upset that people would throw it out. So he says you're not allowed to throw it out. So Mishnah Berurah sounds like he's. It sounds like he takes that to mean, so therefore you should eat it, right? If you're not going to throw it, therefore you should eat it. So also in the Kovei Tzalachos, which I give Shua a lot of credit. What I like very much about the Sefer is that it quotes a lot of sources and actually gives a psak that isn't always strict. Actually, that is often not strict. That is often actually has the shoulders to say, yeah, there's reasons to be strict, but there's no real. You don't have to be machmir. So he says on that halacha isn't really that you have to eat it as much as it is that it shouldn't be just thrown out with the trash. It should be maybe put in a plastic bag and then thrown out in the trash. You should be treated with some amount of respect as it had to do with a mitzvah. Okay, so that is halacha number one. With
like the lulav, right? That's
right, like the lulav, right, but you can't really burn it with the chametz. Many have the custom of holding their lulav and burning it with the chametz. Mm-hmm. So to save this for a year to burn with the next year's chametz doesn't mm-hmm. work so well. So I'll put it in a bag and put it in the garbage. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch writes... So Asr Lomer al Shum Behima bein Chaya bein Shechuta Basr Zela Pesach. You're not allowed to say about any animal, whether it is alive or whether it is dead, that this meat is for Pesach. Well, so again, it looks like you're being sanctifying things outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Now the Mishnah Berurah first says all this is l'chatchila, but b'di'evid, meaning all that is ideally, that you shouldn't use that language. But if you did use that language, so don't worry about it. Your food is not sanctified. You could still eat it. It's okay. One should avoid using that language. And then the Mishnah Berurah adds in a few interesting things. He says, first of all, ha'inu afilu hu katan, even if the person is a child, even if you're instructing a child, the gam inu gedivetlay, even if it is not a sheep or a goat, I mean, it wouldn't be the lo chazi lepesach, it wouldn't be fit for the korban pesach anyways. Gam kenaser, it's also prohibited. Diyachshaduhu shehikdishu mechayim liknos midam of korban pesach. I'm afraid that you're actually sanctifying it in order to sell it, in order to get money for the korban pesach. So that would be the same problem. And again, when you eat it, it looks like you're eating sanctified food outside of the Beis HaMikdash. You shouldn't say to your friend, don't say, roast for me the shank bone for Pesach. You can say it for the Seder, but not for Pesach. If you name Lashon HaMachaber Mashma, the Dafka Behima, Shehu Min Ha. Hakariv agabi mizbeach. So it sounds like only an animal which could actually be brought on the mizbeach. The yesh poskim, however, there are those that are strict. Gamal ofus, also on birds, vidugim and fish. Right, there ain't no fish being brought on the base of mikdash, but also on fish. The efter sheik dishu l'demei mida amar lepesach. I think you could sanctify its money for the purpose that you can sanctify it with regards to its money for Pesach. So you should avoid referring to all of those things for Pesach. So I've heard. I hadn't actually seen it, but yeah. If you check any package that you get for Pesach, what does it say on it? It says kosher le Pesach. So, is that an issue? So it's probably not an issue. However, I have heard that that the broyer's hashkacha, instead of writing kosher le Pesach, I heard writes kosher bi Pesach. It says al?
Because the German says kosher
al. Ah, so kosher on Pesach, which like in Hebrew doesn't really make sense, but it's okay. We'll take it. Okay, next halacha. So that all of that is with regards to your preparations for the Seder, right? With the meat, and buying the meat, and preparing the meat, and fine. So now we've got to the Seder, we've had our first cup of wine, and sometimes it could take a while until you get to the second cup of wine, and, you know, people are hungry. I think one way of actually getting, you know, manishtana halayla hazeh, that on this night everybody eats their vegetables, while on other nights they might hold out in order to eat the meat. But on Seder night, everybody eats their vegetables. However, so it is a long time from Karpas until you get to the next time that you're going to eat or drink, and you know you might not have eaten for a while that afternoon. So what's to be done? So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Im yirtze lishtos kama kosos harshus biyado. Just talking with regards to the four kosos. If you want to have more than four cups of wine, so you're allowed to have more than four cups of wine. However, umikol makom roy lehizahir, makes sense to be careful, shelo lishtos bein mishon l'sheni. You shouldn't drink between the first and the second cup, im lo letzarech gadol, unless you're really thirsty. But then he adds in a couple key words, kedei shelo yishtaker, so that you don't become drunk. And then you're going to not be able to do the Seder and the Haggadah in an appropriate way. Right? So the Mishnah Berurah points out, aha, why are you not allowed to drink between the first and second cups? That you don't become drunk. Are you allowed to drink something that won't
make you drunk?
So it says the Mishnah Berurah, mashma dafka yayin, ushar mashka, or other drinks, kai gavna ha mishtakra. Val mashka, she'in mishtakra. If you're not going to get drunk, if it's not alcoholic, mutter lishtos beinakos. It is permissible to drink between cups. I actually saw a discussion recently where someone commented that they will have a cup of coffee during Magid. Not sure. Recommend. I saw in the Sefer Pisgei Tshuvos that he quotes some poskim that say that to make a bracha of shahak, make an additional bracha, maybe isn't appropriate. But I'm not sure why not. It seems to make sense that one would be permitted to drink.
Wouldn't be appropriate
during
because
that time. I'm not sure. Some kind of hefsek. It's not in the Seder. I'm not sure. Okay. You might bracha achrona, which we're going to get to shortly. Right, so water, even water would be a problem. Right, so clearly the Mishnah Berurah would say it's fine. The Mishnah Berurah is saying you can drink water, so it's not an issue. I mean, that person was disagreeing with the Mishnah Berurah, right? But it seems like according to the Pesach of the Mishnah Berurah, one would be permitted to have coffee during that time.
You could drink grape juice.
Right, so you could drink grape juice, but the Mishnah Berurah said mayim. Right, that posting would say is to have grape juice, but the Mishnah Berurah clearly allows one to drink water, and presumably that would permit other types of drinks as well. Ah, so what about eating? So there's always an issue with eating before hamotzi, like that's just sometimes considered inappropriate, but you are making a bracha of adama before. So what is it? So there is this story about not having more than a kezias of karpas, right? Has everybody heard that? Right, not eating more than a kezias of karpas. So where does that come from? So the Shulchan Aruch itself says it. The Shulchan Aruch says in source number 7, Not al yadav letzorach tibul rishon, you wash your hands for the purpose of the first dipping, right? V'lo yivarech al hanatila, and one would not one should not make a bracha on that washing, right? V'yika, we mentioned before, however, perhaps the halacha of not talking between washing and eating would still be applicable. That probably would apply here. V'yikach meha karpas, you should then take from the karpas, pachos mi kezayis, less than the kezayis, umetavlo b'chometz, umavarech bar pi adam of ochel, and you're going to dip it into your vinegar. Chometz is actually vinegar, however the Mishnah Berurah points out, you can also have salt water. Has anybody ever not had salt water?
No.
Yeah. Maybe if somebody is diabetic, you can remember that, that vinegar is okay as well. Umavarech bar pri adam of ochel, you make the bracha of bar pri adam, and you're going to and you're going to eat. However, one would not make a bracha afterwards. So he says, you should make a bracha bari pi adama, but not make a bracha afterwards. Now, there is a whole consideration here that you should have in mind the maror that you're going to be eating later. Why? The maror comes after hamotzi? Yeah, but hamotzi maybe, only covers things that you actually eat with the matzah. But if something is legislated to not be eaten with matzah, such as maror, right? So maybe maror would not be covered by the hamotzi. So therefore, one should have in mind here that I'm covering the maror that I'm going to eat later, and because you're covering the maror you're going to eat later, what should you not do? You should not make a bracha achrona, right? So now, why would one make a bracha achrona? So one would make a bracha achrona if you would consider magid to be a hefsek. Right, if mag would be considered a separation from here to there, right? So then, so here to the next time you eat, so then you would have to make a bracha achrona. Now, what is perhaps a proof that magid is considered a hefsek? Anything? What would be a proof if you're looking at the story of the seder? Right? Why would I think that magid? What would be a proof you would bring me to say, well, it's clearly a separation because you do this?
Because
you make a bracha on the second cup, right? Why would you make a bracha on the second cup of wine if the magid itself wasn't going to be an interruption? Now, the truth is, that's not such a big proof, because we make brachas on wine all the time, on various mitzvahs. Like it or not, we do. At weddings we do, other times we might make a bracha bar pir gefen, even though, and we actually covered this in a shiur last spring, that it could be that the bracha on wine, when it's connected to a mitzvah, isn't really a birchas hanen in the regular way. So it's not necessarily a proof that it's considered a hefsek. Not only that, but Sfardim don't make that bracha. Sfardim don't make that second bracha bar pir gefen. They only make two bracha bar pir gefens over the course of that night. Okay, so why do we eat less than a kezayis? So the truth is, the source for this, again, there's a footnote in the Sefer that quotes from that Shmuel Kamenetsky points out that the source for not eating more than kezayis is an idea that the Beis Yosef quoted from the Maharil. That it's unclear, he was mesupak, he's unclear, do you make a bracha achrona or do you not make a bracha achrona? So in order to avoid that question, I'm not going to eat a kezayis. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's required. I mean, mi'ikr hadin, and then he goes on to point out that mi'ikr hadin, really, we would pass. And if you would say, well, which way do we paskin? Do you need a bracha achrona? Do you not? Is it a hefsek or not? So mi'ikar adin, we really paskin that it's not considered a hefsek. We really say that magid is not considered separation. We avoid not eating kezayis to be concerned for those opinions that might hold that it is. But you put a gun to an Ashkenazi rabbi's head and say, is it a hefsek or is it not? He would have to answer that it is not. That being the case, it seems to be not much of a reason why one would not be able to eat more than the kezayis of karpas. I'm not sure, and not only that, I would add in, I'm not really sure why it wouldn't be why it would be a problem to eat karpas over the course of magid. Right? I don't see, in fact, that might make it better. Right? If you have a little bit of karpas in the middle of magid, so then you avoid the problem of hefsek altogether. Now, I'm a little nervous saying that because I've never seen anybody else say that, but I don't really see why that would be a problem. So, especially a good way to get everyone to eat their vegetables. Now, could you eat other things? I wouldn't eat mezonos, because mezonos is, mezonos has other problems, as we learned earlier. I'm not sure what you would find that is mezonos around the house. But can you eat other things that wouldn't qualify as karpas? I don't know. If you have potatoes, I think that probably should suffice the issues. I could hear maybe some other problems of you know, like we just had karpas, now we're going to have a kiddush. You know, we're now going to bring out the potato chips and the jelly rings. I don't know what else you could possibly eat that fit that category. That's pretty much all we eat over Pesach, right? Potato chips, jelly rings. I can't eat matzah yet.
Right.
And karpas and vegetables. So that's not necessary.
They are shahakal.
Yes, that is not as well known a fact as it probably should be. That macaroons are shahakal. Okay, just to finish off the two last things I wanted to cover, dipping. So the Ramah comments that has this chumrah out there that every night, what does it say in Manishtana? That every other night we don't dip even one time, and tonight we dip twice, says the Ramah, and guess what? That's it. You're not allowed to even dip, you're not allowed to dip more than twice. Says the Ramah, we should be, that our custom should be, the Ramah is quoted here in this footnote that comes from the Shmuel Kamenetsky Sefer, v'yishnoagim shol lechol shum tibul b'layim, not to eat any dip food except for those two dip things that we do at that time. And may raise this question: why not? What's the problem? Like, we dip twice. It's maybe to raise a question. Like, there's no halacha about dipping twice. It's to raise a question from the kids. That's our minhag. So dip more than that. They'll ask more questions. Like what is the issue there? So he quotes from Shmuel Kamenetsky that he says it can't be. He says he doesn't think that this means that you're not allowed to. So does that mean you're not allowed to dip your chicken into ketchup? Does it mean you're not allowed to dip your brisket that you added water to beforehand into the extra gravy that is now because you added water beforehand? Right? Does that mean you're not allowed to dip anything on your plate? So Shmuel says he doesn't think so. He thinks what it means dipping is that it's like you have like a separate dip on the side. That maybe in order to fulfill this remote would say that you shouldn't have a separate dip, that the whole essence of eating it is to dip it into another food. But to have ketchup on your plate and to dip your chicken into ketchup, so he thinks that is okay. And he brings in another one of these interesting proofs from Manishtana. He says, what did the Manishtana say? Shemachol ha'elos ein anu matpilim afilu pamachas. Right? We don't even dip once. So who doesn't? I dip all the time. Ketchup. Yeah, so getting a meatball. Right? You dip all the time. Right? So what do you mean you don't dip even once? So it must be that this like unique form of dipping, which, be honest, I don't really know what he's talking about. Like, I'm not really sure what would be a separate,
dipping before the bracha. Like, you wouldn't dip your chicken nuggets before you set the bracha on the chicken nugget. You dip. You'd say you'd eat the chicken nugget and then dip it.
Yeah.
Right.
Why?
No?
I don't know.
If you're the person who eats ketchup with your chicken nugget and doesn't eat without it...
Yeah, it might actually be you didn't make the bracha first. To dip first and then make the bracha. To have the food in the ideal form before you make the bracha. That's the that's the idea. So I'm not really sure what he'd be referring to, but he's not offering ketchup for the Seder night. Has anybody here ever heard of this before? I'm just wondering. I remember hearing about this in the past, but you've seen it? No? A quick note on that. Someone told me that they knew the son-in-law of Rav Ruderman, and he said that Rav Ruderman would have dairy seders.
Really? Why?
Because he has meat. It's so late at night. You can eat meat so late at night. They have dairy seders.
Some people have a custom to dip the eggs in the salt water.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an additional dipping. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah. Rabbi, when you mentioned salt water, you said you could use vinegar instead. That's instead of salt. Does it matter what kind of vinegar?
Kosher Pesach.
Yeah.
Kosher Al Pesach or kosher Bit Pesach.
White vinegar. Can you use apple cider vinegar?
I don't see why not. I think the idea is to have an embittering kind of taste. Yeah, the Mishmar adds in one other idea also. He says vinegar, salt, and the Mishmar says one other thing that I don't remember. Okay, and then there is one more time that it is prohibited to eat, and that is after the Afikomen. So that is based on a Mishnah, a code in Shulchan Aruch. Achar Afikomen ein lechol shum davar. You're not allowed to eat anything. So why not? So says the Mishnah Berura, Ein lechol kadesh lo yavur mipiv tam matzah. The taste of matzah doesn't leave your mouth. Shalafikomet shehu mitzvah ayudei tam oso. that it is a mitzvah, and it's al shehu mitzvah al yedam osamachol, to taste that food. Uvidyeved im achol achrav shum davar, if you do eat anything after you after you forgot and you had a jelly ring, right? Yachzor v'yochal kizayis matzah shmur l'shem afikom. You should go back and have it again. It sounds like even after the seder. That's what it sounds like.
So you have your jelly ring and then you go back and eat it.
Right, but that's not ideal. I mean, you shouldn't do that.
Right,
but if you forgot and you ate something, so then you would go back and have more matzah afterwards, and that way you still have the taste of matzah on your mouth. Now the Mishavur then jumps in and says shum davar. He says, however, ulinyan shtia, what about drinking? So that's a dispute. V'yish lahachmer, those that are strict b'mashke hamishaker, right, with a drink that lets you become drunk, right? So don't have your slivovitz after the seder. V'lechatchila, however, nachon lizaher mikol mashke chutz mimayim, one should avoid all drinks except for water. And then he adds in words, v'chi haygavna, and drinks like water. So what are drinks like water? As we learned in another place. So you're allowed to, after the Seder, you're allowed to drink water, and you're allowed to drink drinks like water. So what are drinks like water? So in the Sefer here, in Ritual Sefer, he says tea is okay. He says lemonade is okay. He says water-based drinks are okay. He even says that ices are okay. Water-based ices, as long as it's not frozen.
So they are not drinks like water.
No, but they are. It's liquid. It's flavored water stuff. Yeah. However, he says that that's okay. He says, however, he thinks that soda and coffee should be avoided because that's already a sharp taste. That's already a strong taste, and that's going to knock everything out. But light tasting liquids, he says, are okay. It was quoted to me once. I don't think I ever heard it from him himself. But based on this halacha, Rabbi Mordechai Willig said, it was told to me that he said once that you shouldn't brush your teeth on the night of the Seder. And even those that do brush their teeth on Shabbos and Yom Tov, not discussing that topic now, but those that do brush their teeth, he thinks one should not brush their teeth the night of the Seder. So if you ask him, what about, aren't we afraid about cavities? To which he would answer, Leil Shimarimhu, it's the night of extra watchfulness. So tonight's the night that we'll be watched from having cavities. So he was tricked specifically about that. There is actually an idea of staying up all night learning the night of Pesach, which becomes all the more difficult if you're not allowed to have coffee and you're not allowed to have soda. Do the best you can. There's a discussion about if you wake up before dawn the next morning, does the halacha still apply? So that's a dispute that is out there. However, I have never been asked that, Shaila. That question somehow has never come across my desk. So, So I think we did it.
Dipping, like to eat in, you have to do a motion like this, or like for instance, like with the eggs, you just are the.
So he says specifically with the maror, you're not supposed to do that. Maror, you're supposed to dip in and take out and shake off the charoses. You're not really supposed to have much of a taste of charoses.
So potatoes, you're supposed to do the same thing. I mean, we usually just put them in the salt water and then.
I don't think there's any halacha that you need to taste the salt. That it's you need to have salt water, right?
It's
demonstrating the dipping and then you're going on and eating. Yeah.
Seltzer
you say would be okay. Yes, even flavored seltzer.
What about orange?
Would be okay. The orange juice, I think he's not so excited about.
That's a pure fruit.
Yeah. What? So he said lemonade, but lemonade is really water, just with sugar and lemon added.
Yeah.
So maybe you shouldn't have such sharp lemonade. Yeah.
What if you say for?